my privilege to serve here as pastor, also to deliver the main message each Sunday. We do so from the Bible, starting this week in the book of Luke, a 20-week series in the book of Luke, which is a gospel, one of the four gospels, and today we will kick that off. If you're here to see your kids, grandkids, nieces, and nephews, we welcome you. We're so glad you're here. And I hope that you find this time together here discussing the Gospel of Luke helpful to you. If you are a TV watcher, you know that there are, this season, the best Christmas movies are played over and over and over, right? Best Christmas movies, It's a Wonderful Life, yeah, White Christmas, Elf, and on, right? The movies that have captured us, whether we were young or old, are now going to be replayed for the rest of this month. And but none of these Christmas movies matter anymore. Do you know why? Because now there's a Christmas channel called the Hallmark Channel. So you can forget about those classic movies. Now we have Hallmark Christmas movies. And it's amazing the power that these Hallmark Christmas movies have. But if you don't mind me making an observation about these movies, it seems to me to have the same plot line. Seems to have the same characters with different names. Is that true? Is it just me? Same tensions, same conflict, same resolution. And that's okay, I guess. I also noticed that it's basically the same storyline, and it's primarily this storyline that you're seeing and witnessing and kind of taking in, and that is that Christmas is about romance. It's about true love. It's about putting your family first, and also about making sure that you marry the right man. If you notice that, not the one, anyway. Now, if we agree, which I think many of us have, certainly if you're in the Christian faith, you would agree and probably believe with me that Christmas is not about shopping and Santa and gifts, but is this story of romance, real love, and family, is that the real story? Is that what moves us as believers? Obviously, we believe that there's more. There's more to the purpose of the Christmas season. There's more to the purpose of the Christmas story. Where do we turn to learn the purpose of the Christmas story? We all know a version of the Christmas story. We've all been taught a version of the Christmas story. But where did it come from? And how can we be sure it's the right one? Well, we're going to read here in the next 20 weeks, we're going to read the original story as it was originally told from someone who intended to tell us exactly what happened and what Christmas means. Purpose, value, impact, and ultimately what we discover here in this version of the Christmas story of Luke, we're going to discover that he intended to tell us exactly who Jesus is and also why he was sent. Now, I've got a big idea for you today, and normally I like the big idea to take a lot of information and summarize it, but it's hard to do that with the entire book of Luke. So I've taken the entire book of Luke, and the Gospel, the Bible Project actually kind of puts this overview together for you, and it's our big idea today. So get this, we have this big gospel narrative here today, the book of Luke, and I'm going to reduce it from here for you to here in the big idea, okay? Let's look at it really quick. Here's the big idea that we're going to talk about today. The Gospel of Luke compiles and carries the covenant story of God and Israel to its culmination, and it announces the good news of God's kingdom, and that includes the poor, and it includes the rich. So we have this Gospel of Luke, which is compiling this idea that God introduced himself in the Old Testament. He made promises and prophecies. He made a covenant with Israel, and that story doesn't end when the Old Testament ends. It actually begins to introduce the person who fulfills all of that which has been introduced in the Old Testament. So in the Gospels, what we see is that Jesus here is the one that carries the story of God and Israel over and announces that, in fact, God's kingdom that was promised in the Old Testament has arrived now in the New Testament through Jesus. So that's what we're going to discover and kind of learn and grow together with this. Now, in the recent times, scholars have told us or have come to believe that you can define the word gospel specifically. And what the word gospel means, you know, there's four gospels, right? And there's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The gospel genre of writing actually is an ancient biography, okay? It's an ancient biography that specifically announces the life and impact of Jesus. Luke's gospel happens to be the longest gospel. It has the most detail. Luke's gospel bears enough similarities with Matthew and Mark that they have they've called them the synoptic gospels, that they're in sync with each other. The gospel of Luke is unique because it's one of two volumes, Luke and Acts. Luke is known to be the author of both books, and you'll see certainly if you read Acts that the gospel of Luke and Acts go together. So here's what we're going to answer today. Who is Luke? And why did he write? Who is Luke and why did he write? What we know about Luke isn't very much. We know that Luke doesn't really name himself in the gospel that he wrote, but traditionally it's widely accepted that it is Luke, that in fact he is known to be a physician. He is known to be, makes himself well known as a historian. Luke was clearly a faithful friend of Paul. Several times, Paul, in his writings, mentions Luke, and he says things like this. He calls him the doctor. He refers to him as our dear friend, a fellow worker. And when Paul is mourning about all the people who've abandoned him, he mentions that Luke was the one who was faithful to remain with him, even though other people had kind of bailed on him. Luke is associated with outsiders by Paul. Paul says Luke associates him with those who are not Hebrew, not in the Hebrew covenant that God made with Israel. So he refers to him more as a Gentile rather than a Jewish co-worker. And we learned that Luke, we'll see in this study today, that Luke is an investigative reporter. Now, if in fact Luke is considered by Paul to be on the outside, not the inside, if he's a Gentile, not a Hebrew, and if he's an investigative reporter, not necessarily an eyewitness, should we discount what Luke wrote? We're going to see today that we don't discount it because of that. In fact, he tells Theophilus here in the opening scriptures that he's carefully investigated this story, this biography about who Jesus is and his impact, and that this careful analysis, this investigation, is for the sake of reporting accurately. So we're going to look deeply into that today. So why did Luke write? We have three of the reasons that he wrote right here in the beginning of the book of Luke. So if you have your Bibles with you, would you turn to the very first verse in the very first chapter of the Gospel of Luke? We're going to read four verses today, and here's what we're going to discover in these four verses. We're going to discover that Luke reveals to us in the very, very beginning of what he wrote, why he wrote. He's going to tell us there's more than three, but we're going to learn three reasons why Luke wrote his gospel. Let's read this together. Many people have set out to write accounts about the events that have been fulfilled among us. They use the eyewitness reports circulating among us from the early disciples. Having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I have also decided to write a careful account for you, most honorable Theophilus, so you can be certain of the truth of everything you were taught. So here's number one in your notes. Number one, here's why he wrote the story. Because it occurs to us that Luke loved this story. Luke loved the story. He wrote to retell this beloved and true story from the view of those who reported seeing it. Many people have set out to write accounts, he says, and then he goes on to say, I've decided to write an account as well. Many people were telling the story, and I've decided I'm going to tell the story too. I'm going to retell the story. Luke so loved this story that he, in fact, recognizes that it had had a major impact on the majority of people. How many people set out to write this account according to Luke? Many people. Many people were writing this story. And this story had so captured Luke that he too joined those people to write an account about the events that had been fulfilled. This story has captured people. This story changed people. This story, in essence, has become their story, and it was so much a part of Luke's story that he, too, was going to write an account here about the events that had been fulfilled. And we see now that they're passing this story along. People who had witnessed the story were passing this on, and much like the traditions of the Hebrew faith, they had passed their traditions on orally. They were telling the story. They were passing it along from one family to the next family. Because stories matter. They mattered in the Old Testament. They matter in the New Testament. Stories are created by God. They capture us. They change us. We read stories. We watch stories. We live stories. We tell stories. One modern expert in the area of story is an author named Donald Miller. Donald Miller on The Power of Stories says this, and when you study stories, you're really studying a hidden language every human being understands. Neuroscientists have proven that when you and I hear a story, the rational part of our brain turns off. Let me read that again. Did you know this was happening? Neuroscientists say when you're enjoying a good story, the rational part of your brain switches off. How many of you didn't even know you had a rational part of your brain? It can switch off. Here's what he says. In part, when this switches off, we begin to live vicariously through the experience of the characters. That's why when we watch Jaws, our heart starts pounding. There's a part of our subconscious that actually thinks we're in the water with the shark. Albert Einstein, when he was asked about the impact of the Christian faith, Albert Einstein said, as a child, I received instruction both in the Bible and in the Talmud. I am a Jew, but I am enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. You accept the, and then he was asked this interview question, you accept the historical existence of Jesus? And Albert Einstein said, unquestionably, no one can read the Gospels without feeling the actual presence of Jesus. His personality pulsates in every word. No myth is filled with such life. And this gospel story that we're going to read together over these next 20 weeks has six themes that show up in the story. We're going to look closely at the power of the work of the Spirit, the importance of prayer, the joyful praise of God's people. We're going to look at the pursuit of God as he initiates the pursuit of salvation of all of his people. We're also going to recognize that Jesus has come to rescue, redeem, and love on outsiders. And ultimately, that salvation is available through the cross and the resurrection of Jesus. Now, this narrative, this gospel narrative, is not a code of conduct. When you're reading the book of Luke, you can't receive this as a set of systems of beliefs for you and I to absorb and to live by. It doesn't necessarily mean that we get to agree or disagree with it by the basis of our worldview. It's not a set of behavior standards that you either choose to live by or that you don't live by. It's not a creed that you study to see if it holds up. It's a story that has captured and changed and transformed the lives of people who let themselves receive it. It's an ancient historical story of what actually happening. And if we're reading this book because somehow you are not yet a follower of Jesus and you find yourself reading the Gospel of Luke, spoiler alert, here's what Luke wants. Luke wants you to believe with certainty that Jesus existed, that he died, he was buried, and he was resurrected on the third day, and that Jesus is here no matter who you are, rich, medium, or poor. How many of you like that description, medium, just medium? Rich, medium, or poor, he came for your salvation from the judgment, your rescue from the judgment of sin. That's what he wants you to know. That's what Luke is going to try to get across in this story together. So pay careful attention when you're reading the story. Who rejects Jesus? What kind of person rejects Jesus, hoping that he notices how good they are and how well they live and how devoted they are to the Old Testament or to their own wealth? And then be very, very careful to notice who receives and responds to Jesus as you're reading through this with us together. So what do you do with a story? Well, first of all, you hear it, right? Then you remember it, and if it's a story that is compelling, you rejoice over it. And then I would like to submit to you that oftentimes the response to the story is to retell it. It's to retell the story. As a church, could we not forget, church family, that you and I, when we gather together, we gather around this essential story. This story is in our songs that we sing. This story is in our teaching. It's in our gratitude. It's the cause and the source of our hope and our joy. It's certainly not our life circumstances. It's in this particular story that we read together. So this means our church family is not gathered around our shared opinions. We don't gather around our shared stage of life that we find ourselves in because we're in different stages. We don't gather around our ethics. We don't gather around our moral code that we live by and love, and we don't even gather around, obviously, we don't gather around our politics, fortunately. We instead find ourselves gathering around a story that Luke tells us about a real person whose name is Jesus. So here's a question for you I want you to think about. If you haven't switched off that rational part of your brain yet, let me ask you a question. Which story do you find yourself spending the most time thinking about? Which story have you learned and do you know the best? I have found that the stories that we know the best and tell the best and retell the best are the ones that we've had an experience with, right? We were there. We participated in that story somehow. We were one of the characters in the plot, and we saw what happened with the protagonist and antagonist and the conflict that ensued and the resolve and then what happened. And here's a question. How well do you know this story, the gospel story? How well do you know it? Whatever story you think is about the most, whichever story you know the best, that story, listen, that story has the power. The one that you know the best and the one that you care about the most, that story has the ability to shape who you are, has the ability to shape what you believe and the way that you live. It has the power to shape how you look at the world. Secondly, why did Luke write? This is another reason why he wrote. He wrote because he loved his friend. He wrote this story, not just because he loved the story, but also he loved his friend. You'll notice in the scripture text here that it says that he wrote specifically to the most honorable Theophilus, or we can call him Theo. Not Theo Huxtable, just Theo, the most honorable Theophilus. He wrote to reach his friend, and then he also wrote to reassure his friend Theophilus. This gospel story is meant for an individual who had a specific name, and this is also the only gospel that begins with a personal address. The name Theophilus means lover of God. So it's possible, listen, it's possible that if you find yourself to be one who loves God, a lover of God, that this story isn't just directly written to Theophilus, but also written to you, because you would qualify. You could find yourself easily with the nickname, the one who loves God or lover of God. But he refers to him as the most honorable Theophilus. Why does he do that? It's possible that he was a upper social status. It's very likely that he had the wealth that was needed to pay Luke to do the research or to sponsor, we shall say, the gathering of this vital story. We also know that he is, if he's not a new believer, he very much is interested, it could be a very interested unbeliever in this story, or a recent convert who had been taught about Jesus initially. Luke clearly, though, has a larger audience in mind. Luke wasn't just writing to one person to directly affect one person's life. This gospel story is meant for everyone to hear and to experience. It's quite likely that Luke was writing to kind of a collection of churches, much like the other letters or epistles were written. These believers are likely under fire from those people who are challenging the legitimacy of their faith. But Luke here is taking the time to do his research so that when he gets this story out, that it isn't just written for one person to read, it's written for everybody. I remember when I learned that we had what we needed to record these Sunday messages and put them up on the web. And you know, I mean, I don't know if you can kind of imagine this, but suddenly I felt this new, heavier pressure. Because now these messages here weren't just for a handful of ears to hear and eyes to see. Now it was out there in the world to be shared, but also inspected and analyzed. And I felt this growing pressure to ramp up the urgency of making sure that it was accurate. And Paul, or I should say, what Luke is doing here is he's writing this gospel story with this clearly this shared and accepted responsibility to make sure that he writes in a way that he doesn't just help Theophilus, but he's hoping that it's helpful to more people than just one person. And that, imagine how much time it takes knowing that more people are going to read this. This is going to be out into the world and perhaps on and on and on, generation after generation, this story is going to be read and told from one family to the next generation. Imagine the intensity and the urgency that goes along with somebody who is going to get this story expressed and for all kinds of ears to hear. And when this story is written, here's what we learn. We learn that Jesus fulfills the Old Testament prophecies. Jesus and the kingdom of God is no longer for insiders who are Hebrews who observe the law. Now it's for outsiders and down and outers. The reason why Luke loves this story is because he is able to share with everybody that the messianic king is indeed a king, but he's going to rule and reign over Israel through his suffering, not through his political power. Imagine the work that Luke put into this two-volume masterpiece. Why did he do it? He did it because he loved the story and he loved his friend. So how much of this story, here's a quick question, how much of this story has become your story? And I wonder if you, like many people, are living your story contently with all kinds of dreams and visions and passions that you're devoted to, all kinds of loves and affections that you're devoted to. And then your story just has a tack-on, add-on story, and it's the gospel story. And what I want to ask you to consider today is that this story isn't meant to be tacked on or added to your life. It's meant to transform your life so deeply it becomes your story. It becomes who you are, what you believe, how you live. It's transformational in its power. This historical biography has the power to change hearts who now say things like, I was lost, but because of this story, I'm found. I was blind, but because of this story, now I can see. Our vision here in North Central Church is that we would see gospel transformation, and it would start in every heart, it would affect every home, and it would be expanding into every neighborhood. This story has the power for that kind of transformation. Thirdly and lastly, why did Luke write this? He loved the truth. He loved the truth. Let me contrast this to something specifically. He loved the story. He loved his friend, but he also loved the truth, which means that Luke wasn't attempting to get a rumor started. Luke wasn't at work trying to subvert what the real news of the day was and try to kind of provide this kind of side fake news, shall we say? He was actually loving the truth, and he wrote to raise and reinforce the certainty of our faith. Here's what he says in verse 4. So you can be certain of the truth of everything that you were taught, you can be certain of it. No rumors. He's not expressing any propaganda. There's no interest in passing along hearsay or any kind of religious agenda. These were openly known and widely accepted events, that actual and factual events that occurred. The Gospel of Luke was written to give Christians certainty. This story was meant for vast circulation for everybody's ears and everybody's eyes and everybody's lives. Everybody was supposed to get a look. Now, these four verses that open here in Luke's chapter 1 of Luke's Gospel, they are a formal introduction that is common for any literature, assuming everybody's going to be reading it, assuming that this is for everybody to enjoy. It's not some encrypted private message. It's not an anonymous direct message. It's not a secret and controlled effort to spread a rumor or a lie. This story can be trusted. Many people have written about it. Many people were telling the story. The events have been fulfilled among us. People saw it, experienced it. And Luke isn't critiquing other people. He's just stating a fact that everyone was talking about these events. And if no one was talking about these events, that would be proof that they really didn't even happen. This story that Luke tells is widely accepted as fact. No one disputed it. No one was trying to distort it. No one was trying to undermine it or confront it or challenge it. We can be certain of this gospel account. Why? Because it's steeped in history and it's passed down by eyewitnesses. This story was being told by eyewitnesses. They were reporting it, and Luke was interviewing eyewitnesses, and he was reporting what they had experienced in their own personal lives as an investigative reporter. These authoritative oral traditions were being passed down. They were circulating, and they were being taught from one household to another. And by the way, these eyewitnesses would have been able to detect, wait a second, what you're writing, Luke, is inaccurate because we were there. We saw it with our own eyes. It's too soon. It wasn't written late enough to distort the truth. It was written so close to when Jesus had already lived, died, was buried, and resurrected that he was interviewing people who were there. And if he was writing nonsense, fake news kind of a stuff, people would have said, no, Luke's gospel is trash. It's not real. It's not accurate. We experienced it ourselves. Luke was a historian who has access to Mary and Elizabeth and prominent eyewitnesses and disciples. It was put together carefully and skillfully. He said, I carefully investigated everything to write an accurate account. He's a historian of the highest order. There's this incredible story account about this vigilant historian, an archaeologist who's one of the greatest archaeologists of all time. His name was Sir William Ramsay. Sir William Ramsay studied under these famous German schools, and he was so committed and so convinced that the Gospel of Luke was rubbish, that it was inaccurate, that it couldn't be considered historical narrative of things that actually occurred, that he actually studied archaeology long enough to become an archaeologist himself, and he went all the way to Asia Minor for the purpose of specifically finding the physical evidence that he needed to refute Luke's account and say, see, this whole thing about Jesus and this account is nonsense. Let me read to you what he discovered and what he said as he concluded his study. He said, Luke is a historian of the first rank. Not merely are his statements of fact trustworthy, he is possessed of the true historic sense. In short, this author should be placed along with the greatest of historians. That's what a cynic said. That's what somebody who was challenging Luke wrote. Luke investigated, he researched, and he wrote this account carefully and thoughtfully to give the most important assurance anyone could ever have that this story is indeed true. Now, a couple things I want to turn your attention to before we finish. Number one, there's this word I want you to see. Luke's gospel story says that he's telling the story about events that have been fulfilled. Highlight the word fulfilled. Circle the word fulfilled. I want you to notice the word fulfilled, and here's why. Because Luke is describing what has already been done by somebody else. He wasn't writing a gospel story about what you have done and what you ought to do and what you should be doing. Luke specifically writes about someone who has already done something, and that someone, of course, is Jesus. What Jesus had fulfilled, what he had accomplished by being with us, by living and dying, being buried and raised from the grave. Secondly, I want you to notice this, that in the ESV version, there is a description of who is telling these stories, and here's what it says, eyewitnesses and ministers. And I'd like to kind of mention to you the reality that if someone's an eyewitness, someone has an experience with Jesus, they don't just find themselves settling for, well, I was an eyewitness, they also become ministers. In the New Living Translation, it says eyewitnesses and as disciples, as people who are following Jesus. It is both. The power of the story means that once you experience it, you become a minister or a storyteller. In fact, here's what I want you to do. Would you ever consider telling the story? Tell the story that you love the most to the people who you love the most. Tell this life-altering story to the people who are closest to you. Tell this story that you love the most to the people that you love the most. This work of Jesus is truly working in you. How do I know? Because when it's working in me, it starts to work through me. When this comes alive in me, it comes alive out of me. Once you've seen Jesus, you find yourself serving Jesus. Recently, there was a movie that came out with a absolutely stunning, shocking ending in the Avenger, the Marvel series of the Avenger movies. And I noticed one thing that happened after that movie came out, it was this, that there were people, young and old, who couldn't keep their mouths shut and were spoiling it online, spoiling it face-to-face, men, women, and children everywhere in tears because someone told them how it ended. And I recognize that when a story is compelling and when it's thrilling and when it has an impact on your life, you find yourself relaying and retelling the story. And I would submit to anyone and everyone that the people you love the most will know, they will know what story you love the most. They'll know because we can't keep it in. So it begs the question, do you know this story? Do you love this story? Do you love your friends enough and your family enough to share this life-changing story? How can you tell if you love this story? Because you find yourself telling parts of the story, and you tell them the story that you love the most. My friend and colleague, a pastor at a church that we love and care for down the street in Clay, Trinity Assembly of God, David Hurtwick, he said this about this book of Luke. Luke writes this story not just to present the cold, hard facts, but to pierce the coldest, hardest heart. So the question for us, what can we do? What effort can we put in to ensure that whether they have a soft heart or the coldest heart, that we're telling this story with our lives, with our words, we're sharing it and showing it, knowing that it has the power to melt. Last thing, this means that our faith, thank God, is not based on how you feel. This faith is not based on the way Christians act or live. How many of you think, amen, thank God for that? This story isn't true because Christians behave, and it's not untrue because Christians misbehave. This gospel story, this historical ancient account of reality and real life facts and events, actual and factual, is not based on liking what Jesus taught. It's not based on what you think about how the earth began or how it will end. It's not based on your interpretation of non-essential doctrinal views. It's not based on an agreement with political or moral views. It's based on verifiable historical events that actually occurred. Isn't that cool? That's what our faith is based on. We don't get to read the story and say, I like that, but I don't really care for that. And you know what? I don't really know if I believe that. It doesn't matter what we believe or think we like. This is a record of what occurred. Do we need faith? Absolutely, but it's not blind faith. Is this story spiritual? Yes, but it's also natural. Is the story emotional? For sure, but it's also intellectual. Is it satisfying? No doubt about it, but it's also credible. Here's what I want you to leave with. We can have a growing certainty that is strengthening our faith. You know why Luke wrote this? And here's how I want to finish. You'll see it up on the slide behind me. So that you can be certain that your faith is based on the real thing. Not phony, not a fable. It's not a extrapolation of some things that kind of happen, mostly. It is based on a level of accuracy that you and I can have strength in our faith to know that there's certainty. Let's pray together. Father.